This was a relatively short lecture, and although we have hit the key C++ ideas from the textbook, the text does spend a large majority of Chapter 5 on building a small text-based role-playing game, which we did not discuss in the lecture. So be sure to go through that and understand it, as all the exercises for this chapter ask you to make modifications to the game. And now, the summary. In the real world, objects typically have a multitude of properties that define them. For example, a jet has a quantity describing its ammo count, its fuel, its altitude, and so on. Furthermore, many kinds of objects can perform actions. For instance, a jet can fly, fire a missile, land, and so on. Classes allow us to model real-world objects in code. That is, with classes, we can define new variable types which consist of several properties, and which can perform actions. Consequently, with classes, we can instantiate variables that behave like real-world objects. The public and private keywords are used to enforce which parts of the class are visible to outside code. A class's own member functions can, of course, access all parts of the class, since they are inside the class, so to speak. The general rule of thumb is that data members should be kept internal, and only methods should be exposed publicly. The reason for this is simple. By making the programmer go through member functions, the class can safely regulate how the internal class data can be manipulated. Hence, the class can maintain the integrity of its internal data. In addition to defining a class, you can define what is called a structure. In C++, a structure is exactly the same as a class, except that it is public by default, whereas a class is private by default. One of the goals of C++ is to separate class definitions from implementation. The motivation behind this is that a programmer should be able to use a class without knowing exactly how it works. However, this idea only makes sense when you realize that you may be using classes you did not write yourself. For example, if you ever learn DirectX, you will use classes that Microsoft wrote. In order to separate class definitions from implementation, two separate files are used: header files and implementation files. Header files include the class definition, and implementation files contain the class implementation. Eventually, the source code file is compiled to either an object file or a library file. Once that is done, you can distribute the class header file along with the object file or library file to other programmers. With the header file containing the class definition, and with the object or library file containing the compiled class implementation, which is linked into the project with the linker, the programmer has all the necessary components to use the class without ever seeing the implementation file. For example, the DirectX software development kit includes only the DirectX header files and the DirectX library files. You never see the implementation files. This does two things. First, others cannot modify the implementation, and second, your implementation is protected. Every class has a constructor and destructor, which are special kinds of methods. If you do not explicitly define these methods, the compiler will generate default ones automatically. In short, a constructor is a method that is automatically executed when an object is instantiated, and a destructor is a method that is automatically executed when an object is deleted. A constructor is typically used to initialize data members to some default value, or to allocate any dynamic memory the class uses, or to execute any initialization code that you want executed as the object is being created. Conversely, the destructor is usually used to free any dynamic memory the class is allocated, because if it does not delete it when the object is being destroyed, it will result in a memory leak. Note that you never invoke a destructor yourself. Rather, the destructor will automatically be called when an object is being deleted from memory. When utilizing the object-oriented programming paradigm, the first things we ask when designing a new program is, what objects does the program attempt to model? The answer to this question, of course, depends on the program. For example, a paint program might utilize objects such as brushes, canvases, pens, lines, circles, curves, and so on. After we have decided on what objects our program will use, we need to design corresponding classes, which define the properties of these kinds of objects and the actions they perform. In addition to the data and methods of a class, the class design will also need to consider the relationships between the objects of one class and the objects of other classes. How they will interact with each other, for example.